Hey, folks, welcome to another Coach Rob podcast. I'm David Pingree here with Coach Rob Beams. This is episode 56, titled Coach and Athlete Accountability and Responsibility. So something that has been sent in by a listener or somebody who is a fan of Complete Racing Solutions. And Coach, you like to take those questions that come in and really dive into them and answer them in depth.
So, absolutely.
So here we are. So kind of give us an overview here. Coach boundaries, responsibilities, and accountability.
Well, if anybody's followed me for any period of time, you know how big I am on coach responsibility. You know, I'm very fortunate with our company here. We're in a process right now of getting ready to launch some new modules for our existing athletes. And we'll announce more about that here in probably the next 6 to 8 months. But the bottom line is as a coach, as a human performer, I don't even like to use the word coach. I think that's an adulterated word right now. Everyone's a coach, right? Everybody's an expert. What I look at is I have taken the time to go to school. I'm fortunate enough to have a lot of experience, both experience as an individual athlete as well as working with other athletes, getting them to where they want to be. And it doesn't matter what the vertical is. It could be the endurance side with triathletes and cyclists. It could be on the motorsport side of things, motocross, off-road, road racing. We've done them all. I've worked with the two top wakeboarders in the world. Almost every sport, we're fortunate enough to have worked with those and got them to the point of being number one. The problem that I run into is, where is the education for these so-called coaches that are out there? And, you know, for those of you that follow us in the moto side of the world, I've said this to you in previous podcasts together, and as well as Whiskey Throttle. You know, just because I've read my manual on my motorcycle doesn't mean I should be a certified mechanic, especially for a factory team. But yet, I see these ex-pros that are now taking somebody's health, wellness, and ultimately performance into their hands, making some advice based on things that have absolutely no credibility. And what disappoints me the most is knowing where your boundaries are at, knowing where you're stepping outside or up against a line that you should probably delegate that to somebody. And what is it that we're dealing with? We're not dealing with an inanimate object. We're dealing with a human being that, if you make the wrong decision, you could ruin them for life. You look at something like a fatigue-related disease, which is very, very easy to avoid. Just a little bit of upfront evaluation, some consistent evaluation of blood work, looking at biofeedback indicators on a daily basis, then making executive decisions versus suck it up, buttercup. We're going to do this no matter what. Don't ask questions. If you do, there's going to be hell to pay for that. Instead of saying, you know what, it's a good question. Let me help you understand it, because not that I need a pat on the back. I always want my client to understand, why are they doing what they're doing? If they don't understand it, don't do it. Mm-hmm. If you need more clarification, give me a couple minutes. Let's explain it. And I think with the lack of education, the lack of experience, the lack of education with the experience, what's the domino effect that comes from that? That's the scary part, because There's no, you know, you and I, for those that follow us in the moto world, you know, We grenade a motor, we can rebuild it. It's no problem. May be expensive, may be tedious, but we can rebuild it. If I smoke your adrenals, I can't reach down your throat and plug in another set of adrenals. If I overwork a system, if I chronically dehydrate you, if I have you sleep deprived, if I have you, here's a big one, if I have you calorically restricted, that's the big buzzword in almost all sports, let's be calorically restricted. Well, for those of you that like anything that involves a motor, can you imagine if I ran that motor with that half the amount of oil it's supposed to? It may finish the race, but what kind of excessive stress am I putting on that system?
Yeah.
And so if you look at hydration, run your radiator half empty. What's that going to do to the heat distribution on that motor? It's brand new bikes. Doesn't even have an hour on the hour meter. Brand new graphics, brand new plastics. But I put that bike under excessive heat. Can you imagine being hired by a factory team and you just do that so you can save a little bit of weight on the bike?
Yeah, well, there's certainly, unfortunately, there's also, we have two cultural issues within our sport, and I can't speak to all sports, endurance side or anything, but I imagine there's a lot of similarities where if a little work is good, then more has got to be better. No pain, no gain, you know, all the corny no fear shirt slogans that have been out there over the years. That's a cultural issue that needs to change and be replaced with educated, scientific logic.
Well,
the other thing is these people being coaches who have no business being trainers You can certainly assist a rider. You could be a riding coach, right? That makes sense. But the other thing doesn't. And it's in our sport, in motocross, very common, unfortunately. Right.
Well, go back to the lack of knowledge / equipment. You know, my first racing efforts were back in 1978. We didn't have the internet. We didn't have heart rate monitors. You didn't have pretty much anything. Mm. For those of you that do triathlons might remember back to when we had power bars taped to our top tube of our 10 speeds. You know what I mean? That was our nutrition on a half Ironman. Now you look at where we're at today, and this is where I don't want to sound like I'm stuck in the old ages. If anything, it's the opposite. We have all of this equipment and all of these resources. I'm a big fan of the Garmin platform. I use it with every one of my clients because it's an interface software that helps the athlete understand the why behind it. You don't need a PhD to interpret it. Now, we do extrapolate the data and run it through another series of evaluation and then redistribute a report back because I want the athlete to be more equipped with knowledge. When you didn't have the heart rate monitors, you could plead ignorance. Well, we have them now. If you look at the idea that we have enough information that is available thanks to the internet, if you just put a little bit of concerted effort in there, you can at least get the framework. But how do you really, you know, again, I keep defaulting back to anything that's involved with a motor. I don't have a degree in engineering. So if I'm going to pay somebody to build a motor, here's the characteristics of what I want. This is where I ride. This is when, here's a dollar. Build me a motor.
Sure.
So when that motor comes back, I'm not going to argue with the motor builder because I gave them the specs on what I wanted. They built the specs to what they needed and what I requested them to be. Now I'm going to turn around and argue with them that they didn't build the motor the way I wanted it. They built it exactly how I wanted it. That's when it comes into, I believe that the coach needs to have the insight, not to bring up a sour subject, but if you've ever gone through a divorce, you realize you don't know what you don't know. So you start to ask questions that are completely irrelevant. You've never been through one before, so you don't ask the right questions. So you get tagged on the questions that you didn't know to ask. Mm. Well, now when you look at human performance, we're at a point now, and when I say human performance, you could be a weekend warrior. I think you're an athlete. Please don't diminish that. But when, as a coach, because we're talking about coach accountability, coach responsibilities and boundaries, I feel it's important that you understand where is that athlete beginning at. It's real easy for somebody to come in and say, oh, I want to win a national championship. I want to win a number one plate. So does everybody else on the starting grid. Where are you at and what's keeping you from where you want to be there? And then help the athlete understand, is that a strength issue, a nutrition issue? Is it a mental issue? It could be all the above. Mm-hmm. But where's the biggest opportunity for improvement? Why reinforce what you're already good at? Mm-hmm. So when a so-called human, and I'm not going to use the word trainer because I think trainer, these weekend workshops where you can go become, you know, certified in a weekend, doesn't do it justice. Doesn't even begin to do it justice. You can't go to a weekend and learn a concept and now you're a guru of something. What we want to stay focused on is what are the principles of nutrition and physiology and stop mucking it up. Mm-hmm. Quit convoluting the truth. Quit spinning it for an agenda. I don't mind saying on public record, our nutrition strategies haven't changed since 1978. You know, it's when you look at, you go to the Olympic Training Center, they're not having you eat something that comes out of an envelope. Hmm. They would never let you do that. When you go into the cafeteria, nothing comes out of an envelope. It's real raw food that's prepped and cooked and put out there for the best athletes in the world. Why are we doing something different? Oh, it's because a riding coach or some other local expert said, well, that's what I'm doing. Then you find out that he or she's probably selling it behind the scenes, and that's why they're advocating it.
True.
So that's where I get into a problem with the quote-unquote coach that becomes the consummate professional that essentially is the master of nothing. You know what I mean? It's, mm-hmm. And I know there's a lot of cliches out there, and I don't want to go down that bunny hole, but it's very disappointing to me, like you said earlier. Everything that I try to do is make sure that an individual that comes to me that, especially in the motocross world, I've never raced at a professional level, but I do ride enough to know the gyroscope and its characteristics, i.e. the motorcycle. If you look at a motorcycle, it's in a three-dimensional plane, left peg, right peg, above the seat, below the seat, and what's in front of the pegs and behind the pegs. Well, if you're not marrying up the physiology to what you're trying to do, you and I, we don't play a lot of golf. I go play 18 holes of golf. I can barely move the next day. But I can go run 20 miles with you. I can go for a 100-mile bike ride.
Sure.
I can moto down with you, but I'm not in shape to play golf. You know what I mean? It's just, it's the sport specificity that's a little bit out of whack. So everything that we try to do in the moto world is to get people to understand how they integrate. But at the end of the day, I'm never going to be able to give the same insight that you can, because you've been at that elite level that I've never seen before. So that's where it's a little bit of a convoluted mess. Yes, you've been there and done it, but when you ask most ex-pros, it's like, well, that's what my riding coach said, or that's what my, well, why did he, well, because he, and I mean, goodness, you could take that back to 72 at the rate you're going.
Yeah, it's just, well, this is what I was taught, and the guy that taught me, he was taught by this guy, and these are good guys. It's like, okay, that's not a good answer.
Right.
And, you know, I've spoken, and I'm friends with a lot of these trainers. They were former racers, and I've encouraged them, you need to go learn the why. You know, you could tell a guy what to do, and maybe you're hitting it on the head, and maybe you're not. You need to understand why you're telling them to do that, and you need to be able to, like you guys do, sort of diagnose and tell when there's signs that something's off, and then figure out why is it off, and then here's how we fix it.
Well, and then that brings up to what you were talking about is keeping the ego in check, both on our side and their side, because I'm only here to make the riding coach and the team managers, all those people that work with those riders, I'm just trying to make their life easier. I can't even imagine to see the P&L statement that's behind an athlete. All the money, their resources. We can't even begin to comprehend. We watched somebody race on Saturday night. How much R&D was in that bike when it first went from two-stroke to four-stroke? When do you ever get that R&D money back? Yeah. So it's real easy to say, especially when you see somebody come off of an 85 that goes into the pro ranks, how much money was invested in that athlete? Where's the ROI on that? All I'm saying is my only desire has ever been is to get in front, and let's start at the top, team owner, then the parent, then the agent, and then down to the rider, be able to give the feedback so that they know that what they're doing is they're on a trajectory of constant incremental improvement. This idea that you see one person, they're up, and then the next thing they're down, and then they're out for 3 weeks, 3 months, 3 years. Some crawl back, some don't crawl back. They get pushed out. And I liked what you said earlier. It's a cultural issue, and it's in triathlon. It's in moto. It's in just every single sport. Absolutely. We do a lot in speed and agility sports, soccer, lacrosse, football, and stuff like that. And it's interesting because the parents have to kind of go down on the low down, because if their quote-unquote coach finds out that they're getting some outside support, they'll get ostracized. They'll be kicked off the team.
Oh, is that right?
Absolutely, because you know everything. So now a parent comes in and says, hey, your daughters are very good at soccer. So you get a soccer coach that says, what do you mean you're going somewhere else? You don't think I'm good enough? Well, now your daughters get blackballed. We've seen it in collegiate swimming. We've seen it in high school swimming. We've seen it in cross country, lacrosse, soccer. And what's interesting to me is the parents are only trying to make the athlete better for the sake of the team, obviously for college and stuff like that. But no, as soon as they find out, you're blackballed. And so it puts the parents into a predicament. My number one focus will always be, if it's a team situation, I recognize that a team has got a lot more R&D than we see and know about. So I want to make sure that that investor in that team through that rider understands exactly where that rider's at. Are they in a state where they're just getting stronger and stronger? It's what we call an anabolic growth. Most people hear the word anabolic and think steroids. You're either in a state of growth or a teardown, anabolic or catabolic. I want to make sure that the athlete can do just a little bit more every day. Not go from 1 to 100, just 1% every day. Yeah. Because if I can keep them 1% better every day in sands of an injury or an illness, what's their potential for improvement? Endless. But that doesn't...
365% that's a year,
right.
My math is right.
Yeah, you're exactly right.
I'm real sure.
And if I'm sitting in front of a team owner, and then I'm sitting in front of their group of investors, ancillary sponsors that allows that team to go racing, and then I've got to talk to the parent first, then the agent, and then get it down to the athlete, they don't need to have the nitty-gritty dirty stuff. We have what we call a C report, a C-suite, and we call it a consolidation report. And what we do is we make sure that when that athlete, whether you're a weekend warrior or you're a factory rider, everybody that needs to be involved in the executive decision of what we do today, there's an evaluation criteria. And as a coach, we have a responsibility to put it at 10,000 foot view for the owner, where he can go in and go, okay, help me understand this. And then we drill down and we can show where every variable gets consolidated to that one cheater. It's no pun intended. It's like a C-suite report for an executive. if he or she wants to know where that number comes from, you can show the report that it was extrapolated from.
Yeah.
But when you're dealing with human performance, nutrition, hydration, sleep, work volume, work intensity, work frequency, travel, all that's got to be consulted. We do that. We're an analytics company. So the idea here when we're looking at coach responsibility is knowing where the boundaries are at. I'm not going to tell you, you do a lot with riding, with riders. I'm not going to argue whether or not they should have one or two fingers on the front brake, but I want to make sure that they've got the strength and the flexibility so they don't get arm pump and that their elbows don't drop and all the biomechanic atrocities. Well, what would cause that? Scar tissue, immobility, tight muscles, muscular imbalance, imbalance between strength and flexibility. Think about coming into a corner and you keep dabbing your foot. And then you're like ready to pull your hair out. You're like, why do you keep dabbing your foot? Then we take the rider off the motorcycle. Quadriceps are super strong, but the hamstrings are tighter. So the hamstrings keep wanting to pull that leg down every time they put their foot out. Well, that's not them being belligerent. That's a biomechanical restriction.
Sure.
So, and then you get somebody that doesn't know what they're talking about. They go, oh, he's got to be stronger. So they overstrengthen the quads at the expense of the hamstrings, still keep dabbing their foot until they blow their knee out and go, oh, it was a flexibility issue of the hamstring. Not to sound cynical, but that's what
late,
we deal with.
A little late at that point.
Remember what we said, why wait till the system's broke to go, hey, we should fix it. It's hedge it off early.
Yeah.
That's where the evaluation criteria come in. Education, experience, and the ability to evaluate, I believe, is the responsibilities of a coach.
And what about proactive versus reactive? Let's talk a little bit about that.
Well, it's right in line with what we're saying right there. If I know that you're already good at something, let's say your sprint speed is really good, and all I do is reinforce your sprint speed, I've failed you on the evaluation side of saying, look, where you're getting beat, and this is going to sound like a bad cliche. If I can get the listeners to stop and think about, if I took your most recent race and we were to break it down, where did you get beat? If it was you didn't, there's a lot of double negatives here, you didn't have the ability to sprint early, but everybody knows your characteristics are you come on strong at the end of the race. If I'm racing you, I just wait. I got to get a big enough lead early and hope that I can make it big enough that you can't bridge and catch me.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm doing is I'm exposing your weaknesses to beat you. Now, if you go out and you work on your sprint speed and your strength, late moto endurance is already there, and you work on your sprint speed, you change the narrative of how I race you. Well, are you going to wait until you just keep getting beat and say, I told you so? Or are we going to look at it and go, okay, let's have some thick skin here. Historically, this is where you've been getting beat. Now, what I do is I take you off the bike or I take you out of your sport and we break it down and we test sprint speed, anaerobic threshold, we test muscular endurance, and we put it all together. So whether your race is 20 minutes or whether your race is, you know, a 4-minute running mile, not to sound mean when I say this, but if we're looking at moto, it's amazing to me how somebody will never have been fast enough to go 2 minutes for a lap time and then they're out there trying to sprint under a 2-minute lap time. Why are you doing that? You're running that ragged edge where you're going to throw yourself on the ground. Now we could get into a whole conversation about the brain's ability to process speed. That's another dynamic that has to be looked at. Stabilized blood sugar helps you process speed. So when you're dealing with somebody like yourself at a very, very elite level of riding a motorcycle, the brain's ability to process speed is directly related to blood sugar levels. So then we look at nutrition. Well, why do I wait till you yard dart yourself and go, hey, look, you know what we could have done to avoid that? Just made sure that you topped off on your electrolytes and sugar before we went out. Well, that would have been a novel idea 15 minutes ago. And you see it happening and over again.
And I think part of this, on the part of the athlete, has to be, you've got to be open to admitting your weaknesses, exposing your weaknesses. Because, right, we're not good at that.
No, not at all.
Athletes don't want to admit. That, you know, they'll say, well, I could be a little bit better here, but I'm still pretty good there. Mm-hmm. I mean, they just... Very few will go, man, I suck at that. I got, you know, this is where I'm getting beat, and here I'm not real good.
Exactly.
You know, you got to be able to be look in the mirror and at least be honest with yourself.
Yep.
And if you trust your coach, be honest with him so that you guys can make some real progress.
Now, let's take that and let the ball bounce the other direction. If I'm taking the time to evaluate, and I'm going to be somewhat quick here, so please, I apologize for the listeners. When you tell me, When you wake up tomorrow morning, what I'm getting is a quick synopsis of everything we did yesterday and all the days before. That's called residual fatigue. When you wake up in the morning, I have to have enough, as you say, thick enough skin to be able to say, you know what, we may have overdone it yesterday. heart rate's elevated, appetite suppressed, sleep score was down. We look at what we call a deep sleep to awake time ratios. There's other variables, and I don't want to be just blowing through him. I just want people to understand when you wake up in the morning and the athlete says, hey, I'm beat. You've got to look at the non-emotional variables and go, okay, resting heart rate's elevated, sleep score was down, deep sleep was down. There's enough variables that go, you know what? You pushed them a little too hard yesterday. And you go into that athlete and you go, you know what? This is what I always say. The definition of overtraining is not how much you do, but how much you can absorb. So when you wake up in the morning, it's a quick snapshot to see, did you absorb yesterday? Now, this is where we start playing a game of ping pong. I looked at the volume. I looked at the intensity, and we did the workout. But I also know that you're going to need to understand, you go out and you do, I'm going to keep it relevant to moto. You go out and you moto down for a 30-minute moto. And we go and we look at your calorie burn rate, and it's roughly 500 calories. Well, we do four of those. We do what we call a one-to-one work rest ratio. You moto for 20 minutes, you rest for 20 minutes, and we do, let's just say, four sets of those. Well, pretty even math, right? Four motos at 500 calories, you're 2,000 in the hole. We've already identified a good eating strategy. We call it a portfolio of nutrition. You know what to eat. We know what works for you that doesn't cause any gastrointestinal issues. I have to make an assumption, and I know making an assumption is pretty dangerous. I have to make an assumption that you're still eating in between your motos. When we're done for the day riding and working out, I'm assuming that you're hitting your recovery calories, and then you're going to go home and you're going to eat the necessary food, do the contrast therapy, do your foam rolling. So you've got to be willing to do the calories in the post-recovery to make sure that I don't invalidate the volume and the intensity that I've done. So now we're playing some ping pong.
Yeah.
You're saying, I'm smoked. I'm like, did you do everything that you needed? Oh, yeah. Let's pull out the numbers. So we keep a nutritional food log, which is digital. We can bounce it against what your calorie burn rate is. That report is called a calorie gap. How much did you burn versus how much did you take in? Well, simple math. You can't be running a deficit every day and wake up every day feeling peachy king.
Right.
Now, we get into the deep adrenals, right? The adrenal is the only system in your body that helps you deal with stress. A calorie restriction is a stress. Chronic dehydration is a stress. Food and dehydration, or food limitation and dehydration, you're going to have a bad sleep score. See where we're heading here?
Right. Now it stacks up.
It all stacks up. Now the athlete wakes up and goes, I'm smoked. Am I going to be arguing with you when I go and look at your food log and you burnt 3,700 calories yesterday, but you only took in 22? Who's responsible? Because I took the time to educate you on the value of calories, electrolytes, hydration, and you're telling me you get it. And then I showed you, this is what we're going to burn when we put in a big set. And you know it's coming, and then you choose not to do it. Is that me being wrong or inept?
No, it's where the rider needs to take some responsibility.
But it goes back to what we said earlier. The athlete needs to be taught why. That's where the coach accountability and education and experience comes in.
Yeah.
Help the athlete understand how to evaluate, am I getting enough? If they say yes, now we can move to phase two. Now we can start massaging, working out. Did we find the happy, sweet medium? For those of you that are listening, take and draw two circles and let them overlap ever so slightly in the middle. The circle on the left could be under anything, under eating, under hydration, under training. On the top are the right circle, over training, over eating, over hydrating. Where it overlaps in the middle is a sweet spot. That's where we got to play some ping pong. I'm going to educate you on what we're doing and why. You're going to be given, see, remember what we said earlier, you have to have education, experience, and evaluation. If you know how to evaluate it, you know that you're going to burn roughly 500 calories, and we're going to moto 420s. You know that you're going to be burning at least 2,000 calories, not counting what you burn just to sustain life, and then you choose to eat 1,800 calories. You can't put blame on me the next morning when you wake up and you're exhausted, and you can't be blaming everybody around you by Friday when you're exhausted, when you've missed your calories 4 days in a row, but you had a portfolio of food that you know works for you. You just chose not to eat it.
Yeah.
Because you're dicking around on social media and doing everything else. So I don't mind somebody saying, hey, Rob, I'm really, really tired. I'm like, no problem, man. Let's take a look at your average heart rate, your max heart rate, your calorie burn rate, your sweat rate. Now we're going to go look at what you took in, food and hydration, bounce it through your sleep variables, what comes out at the end. Either an athlete that's anabolic, getting stronger, or catabolic, as in teardown mode.
Eating this himself.
Well, this is where coach accountability is just burning me up right now, because there are athletes out there that it's not, you've got coaches out there that say, look, I don't care about longevity. I'm only here to win championships. I'm not the best person in the world. I don't have a halo over my head, but to me, that's immoral. How can you have a platform that you say, look, I don't care about longevity. I will win the championship at all costs. And that cost is your health. And then as soon as I smoke you, sorry, you're going to be sitting in the corner sucking your thumb with your blankie, because when you get adrenal fatigue, your doctor says, look, you got to eat more and sleep. So that's okay. The circus passes and leaves town, and you're sitting in the corner trying to recover. The next funnel of athletes come in. Where's the coach accountability? Mm-hmm. Human being to human being, because that is somebody's son. That is somebody's partner. Come on, man.
Yeah.
That's why I'm saying it's got to be coach, and it's got to be the rider as well. But the rider's got to be, if you look at what we said at the beginning of today, the rider has to benefit from education, experience, and evaluation. Once they understand it, now let's start to apply it. Now, when you apply it, this is my biggest C word, complacency. When an athlete knows what to do and doesn't do it, and then just chooses to blame everybody else around them, what am I supposed to say? I told you so. I mean, I just parted ways with an athlete a couple weeks ago. Fantastic athlete, you know, did very well on the way up, and kind of didn't take his strength and flexibility very seriously. And now he's got a herniated disc and pretty much has got to go under the knife to get it corrected. What am I supposed to say? I told you so. See, that's where it puts me in an awkward position, because I don't live with you, and I'm not going to spoon feed you, and I'm not paid to be somebody's man friend. I'll give you all the time in the world, and that's why I appreciate the listeners listening. I'll take the time to educate. And if you don't understand it, ask questions. Because again, you don't know what to ask. But if you ask enough questions, you'll get it eventually.
Yeah.
But then once you understand it and then you choose not to, I can't be a part of it.
Yeah.
It just annoys me to no end.
Yeah. And that's, you know, a lot of that is probably immaturity or lack of commitment on their part.
Mm-hmm.
I think for a lot of athletes, you know, this topic of all of the things that go into performing at a high level, It gets overwhelming.
Absolutely.
You're like, man, that's really complex. You know, like, well, I got to weigh myself. I got to do this. Oh, you know, and then they might just take the easy way out and go, you know what? I've made it this far.
Right. Well, you know what the number one default answer is? Just get a faster motor, stiffer suspension. I mean, I hear it all the time, especially for parents on the younger side, say 65, 85, going to the big bike. Well, they haven't hit maturity yet. I get that. But you're on your fast track to a 125, and then you get on the 125 and it yard darts you, and then you're hurt, and then you call me and you're like, can we fix this? And I'm like, we're about 2 years too short, because the injuries have already incurred, scar tissue's filled in, flexibility's a minimal. You're a little bit behind on the development scale because the puberty's dropped into place, but you didn't leverage it. And then what do? They go to the other extreme. They just go overboard, just kill it in the gym, you know, every day. Then you have the other problem of adrenal fatigue and injuries and all that. And that's where it becomes a catch-22, because, yes, it's my wheelhouse. I love creating durable athletes. But to your point, when you have a young athlete, well, the parent needs to be the intermediate there to help us understand. Now, once that athlete starts to develop, now think about it. Me, with the parents, with the riders, 2 or 3 years of knowledge, they're steamrolling. While everybody else had kind of peaked early, and now they're starting to fall off because of injuries and what have you. Our athletes just keep going. Now, here's what really smokes my butt. You'll get an athlete, and I've taken them from a 65 to a factory ride. Now they're too cool for school. They don't want to listen anymore because they think they've arrived. $500,000-$600,000 contract, 2-year contract.
Well,
they don't want to hear it anymore.
Yeah, that's a shame.
And you got everybody in the world kissing their ass around them, telling them everything they want to hear. Because we don't want to have Johnny do something he doesn't want to do.
Right.
And the last thing I'll say on that note is the way that you mentioned that it's somewhat complicated and overwhelming. I have to politely disagree, because if you think stepping on the scale in the morning and in the evening and every time you get ready to work out is too much, then I really do doubt your dedication to anything.
Absolutely. But I'm telling you, you'll probably hear that a lot. If you could get inside somebody's inner monologue.
Are you kidding me? I lose them every day to it.
Yeah.
But what I always say to them is, you didn't come out of the womb understanding compression and rebound and sag setting, but you learned it. Why did you learn it? Because the mother of invention is necessity. Mm-hmm. If you want to have a long career, if you want to be sans injury and illness, you better embrace it. I always say to my athletes, you don't know German. So you can't just drop off a plane and ruck up to a restaurant and start ordering in Germany. Well, what makes you think you're just going to, in 1 year, understand nutrition, hydration, sports psychology? I'm giving it to you in bite-sized portions. I kind of have done it enough years. I know kind of what that evolutionary conversation looks like. Mm-hmm. Just listen. Just be open. But again, you get success. Everyone loves structure when it creates initial success. And then when the success, they want everybody to tell them what they want to hear, not what they want to do. And then you have parents that are living off the kids' money, and then you're screwed. So that's why I call it coach accountability and then athlete responsibility, because it's your responsibility to get educated, but then you have to step up with the information that you've got.
So our notes here say the person that wins on race day isn't the fastest, but rather one that minimizes mistakes. Coaches have a responsibility to educate the individual about preparation on these issues. Sleep, hydration, warm-up, threshold of fatigue, food, soft tissue, critical speed, and recovery. What's your take on that?
Well, think about what you just said right there. I'll have somebody that will have a really, really good day at the races, and they're like, oh, Rob, this is awesome. I mean, your program's working. I'm fitter, I'm faster. Very nebulous words. But I'm fitter and I'm faster. Well, is that truly because you're fitter and faster? Or is it because you showed up properly hydrated, rested, and fed? Because they're always going to interrelate themselves. I can have somebody that's fitter than fit, has all the natural skills, your level of skills, and then they get 3 hours of sleep, show up with no breakfast and dehydrated. You know, I always use this analogy going back to the moto side of things. You could have a full bore race bike putting out 60 horsepower, and my PW50 is going to go it's going to run circles around your race bike if you don't have fuel in that bike.
Yeah.
And yet you put that in the human, it goes back to what we said earlier. Can you imagine if human performance was absolute as mechanical? Because there's not anybody that's listening that rides motorcycles that doesn't check the oil, the radiator, and their gas before they go out and ride. But yet, if I were to challenge the listeners right now, depending on when you're listening to the show, what have you eaten in the last 12 hours? How much fluid have you consumed in the last 12 hours? How much time have you taken to do, you know, some dynamic movements or foam rolling? Just all these little small elements, but yet a motorcycle, if there's a mechanic out there that can give me an exact number, I'll send you a gift if you'll email me. How many moving parts are there in a motorcycle? A finished product that rolls up to the starting gate, how many total moving parts from internals?
That's a lot.
All the way out.
Yeah, there's a lot.
But yet everybody that's listening that rides moto deals with all of those moving parts, and we're only as strong as our weakest link, and people go, that's mechanical, man. Well, wait. How hard is it for you to get 9 hours of sleep, properly hydrated, eat every couple hours, show up with stabilized blood sugar? Because now the preparation's in place. Now I can complement the preparation you've done, quote-unquote training, whether it's skills and drills with you or whether it's fitness with me. At the end of the day, we had a good weekend of racing. Was that today's proper preparation, or was that truly you're elevating your game, coming in prepared at another level? Took the riding coach's skills, took your fitness. See how it all becomes let me draw this just as an example. We may have listeners that like to put puzzles together. You look at that puzzle in the store and you see a finished product. Then you open that puzzle up and they say there's 1,000 pieces. Are you ever going to pick up that one puzzle piece? And statistically speaking, you might, but I'm going to bet that you don't, that you put that piece exactly where it needs to be. The first time you pick it up.
Yeah, my guess is a hard no.
Hard no.
Unless it's a corner piece, and then you got a
corner,
1 and 4.
You got a 1 and 4. But outside of that, if you look at that, how many, because I want the listeners to understand, I get it. It's like, oh my gosh, nutrition and hydration and this. What about a puzzle? And if I can get you to turn it around, because the puzzle, you see what the end product is. Well, what was it for you when you were racing at a pro level? That number one plate sitting up there kissing it with a big trophy in your hand, and a fat check on its way in the mail.
Yeah.
You knew what the end looked like, but from where you're at to what that was going to take, how many curveballs did you get thrown? Injuries, late planes, the list goes on and on.
Yeah.
You guys could probably write your own memoir book about it. How many pieces and parts did you have to pick up and put back down before you finally got to when you were leading that Supercross main event? See, people only they saw Ping leading a Supercross. What led from the day when you moved to California?
Yeah, that's like saying you open the puzzle and boom. Pour out all the pieces and they all just land and fall into place.
That's exactly right. And that's
statistical improv.
But I want that to be an encouragement to the listeners, because there's 1,000 pieces and you may pick the same piece up 500 times before it finally fits. But when it fits, then you can move on to the next piece. Mm-hmm. And that's what we always want people to understand is, let me help you understand hydration. Then it becomes autopilot. Let me help you understand portfolio of nutrition. Comes autopilot. Soft tissue. Now let's go talk to your riding coach. I want to make sure you can stand up as long as he wants you to in the deepest ruts possible. Mm-hmm. And I need to make sure that inside leg is strong enough so you don't let it dab and you throw the balance and the input of the bike off. I need to know you can look far enough ahead. You've got stabilized blood sugar. You can process speed. Now the riding coach is happy as a lark. Mom and dad are happy. Rider's happy. That was today. Now we get to start all over tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah. And every day, you know, what do they say? Rent is due every day or mm-hmm. something. I forget the exact, but it's saying every day you're starting over. It's not like, okay, I did everything great today. Now I can just coast the rest of the week. No, I mean, every single day.
Well, think about, and so any of my clients that follow, you know, they know exactly what I'm going to say here. Everybody says they pretty much have the same goal. They want to be number one, whether that's in fitness or relationships or whatever it may be. But are your behaviors, your daily behaviors, in alignment with what your desirable outcome is? Because if you're looking at giving up fast food as a sacrifice, it is not in alignment to being healthy and fit and fast. Mm-hmm. But if you look at that as an investment, you don't think twice about driving past a fast food, because it's an investment of where you want to be. So we say championship end result is a byproduct of championship behaviors and habits. Now, some people may roll their eyes and say that's pretty cliche-ish, but it's not hard. Mm. If you want to drop body fat, give up fast food. But make that an investment, not a sacrifice. Foam rolling. Yeah, it's like watching grass dry. Grass grow. But the bottom line is it's going to increase range of motion. It's going to decrease your risk of injury. You don't have to, like, obsess about it. When you're sitting at your desk listening to this podcast, put a tennis ball under your foot. Mm. I mean, what's a contact point on a motorcycle? You know, when you're sitting at your desk, put a tennis ball in your hamstring. I mean, it's one thing you don't have to do later tonight, but we all have tight hamstrings. I mean, just it's the idea that we've got to have more of an alignment between what we want and what we're willing to do, and then have clarity on why we're doing it, and then embrace why we're doing it. We're going to do a future podcast on, you know, what is it that, you know, the end result when we don't do the right things is burnout. If we don't get enough sleep, we get burnout. We don't get enough food, we get burnout. If we overtrain volume or intensity or frequency, we get burnout. Why is that? And we're going to do a whole podcast on that as well. But, you know, that's the kind of stuff that there has to be foundational concepts that are understood before we can move on to the bigger grand scheme of, I want to be healthy, I want to be fit, and then I want to be fast. And that's where I find that there's a big disjoint, especially in moto, that there's too many people that will put the desire to go fast in front of health. And then we ruin these young kids, and then we just push them out to pasture. And I could give you 25 pros right now that are not reaching their potential because early in their career they got smoked. And there's nobody holding that person accountable. To me, I'm like, that's highway robbery.
Yeah, and it's probably going on in a lot of different sports.
All sports.
I want to switch gears here to athlete accountability and responsibility. And, you know, sort of our three topics here would be knowledge, experience, and confidence. So on the knowledge side of things, it just comes from being educated, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Everything we've talked about.
And a lot of this comes from the coach, but nutrition, strength, critical speed, opportunity, cost of time and energy, sleep, flexibility, threshold of fatigue, hydration, and endurance. Probably, you know, without as a young athlete or without some assistance from a coach, you're not going to know a lot of this stuff. But that's your job, is to get that education.
Absolutely. Well, and what is the end result for me as a coach? Is to have an athlete that rucks up to the starting grid and is confident. Mm-hmm. Well, there's no dipstick in your chest that says, oh, Ping's confidence today is quite high. I think he'll do well. But if I can show them through consistent testing on the motorcycle and off the motorcycle, you're going to go, wow, my strength to weight ratios are better. Just for the sake of the listeners, critical speed if we're going to put it back in terms of moto, is when you go to the track and you size the track up, let's say you run a 5-lap moto, you throw out the fastest and the slowest and you average the other three. That's your critical speed numbers for that day, given the track conditions.
Okay.
So get away from, well, the last time we were here, we ran a 158. It's a different track. It's a different day. Reestablish your critical speed numbers for today. Threshold of fatigue is simply, let's use the same number. You go to the track, you run 5 laps. Your fastest is a 158. Your slowest is a 201. You average them all out. Let's just say for even numbers, it is 2 minutes. Now you moto down and you do a 10-lap moto. Well, for 5 laps, you're able to run 2 minutes on the nose. Well, multiply 5 times 2, and that's 10 minutes. That's your threshold of fatigue before you start to fall off 201s, 201.5, 202s. So now you know, okay, this is my fastest speed given today. This is where my threshold of fatigue kicks in. Well, now you take that knowledge off the motorcycle. You know after 10 minutes, you start to throw anchor. You're mentally going to be able to go into those row workouts, bicycle workouts, running, swimming, whatever you're using. You know you got to mentally push through that 10-minute barrier. So now you can start to elevate that glass ceiling.
Gotcha.
But we're back to confidence. How do I know if you're confident or not? If there's no dipstick in your chest. But if I can show you that your strength-to-weight ratios, your time trials, you're faster at a lower heart rate, you can ride a longer moto at more consistent lap times, and the heart rate stays within a realistic range that's sustainable, i.e. non-anaerobic. You stay aerobic. Now you're confident. You're like, wow, this is working.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, you'll feel the results of what the work you've been putting in, right?
But what about confidence?
And that confidence will build from that.
Well, that's where we get into the rhetorical statement. Does accomplishment create confidence, or does confidence create accomplishment? Because they're obviously interchangeable. But that's where, as a performance coach for me, I'm not here to just blow smoke up your skirt and say, hey, I'm just a high-paid man friend. That's why, you know, I've been asked by teams to, you know, riders that I worked with. I live in Florida, and one of the riders I was working with probably 20 years ago, we had a very, very stellar amateur career, and he signed with a team in California, and he's like, I need you to come out to California. And at the time, I had two very small young boys, and I said, I don't care how much money you're printing. I will never sit out at the track with a pit board and be somebody's man friend. Now, I'll go to the track for performance purposes, but I'm not going to be a sunrise to sunset, have breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and dote all over this guy. That's just not my MO. I'm going to empower you with the knowledge, and then I'm going to ask you to take off with it. And then when you capture that data, and then I download it in our analytics system, and then I give you a report for your team owner, your manager, your mom and dad, your agent, yourself, that's when we all have these all-hands meetings to say, again, I'm not going to get into the nitty-gritty unless the question comes up. Well, how do we know that number's accurate? Well, you're wearing the watch. So we show where that information is captured. Now, of course, there's always things that can influence it for sure. But no matter how many variables could influence, you have to remember, for example, when we're training with heart rate monitor, you'll have people that say, well, heat and humidity and fatigue can influence heart rate. You're exactly right. But if you're cross-referencing all of them, it factors out that anomaly because all variables are kept constant. So that's what we've got. That's what we try to do as an analytics company, is we're back to confidence of the athlete. Now we're back to the ping pong game. I can only create confidence in the athlete if the athlete's going to do what they've been educated to do because they understand why it's important with the right things, the food portfolio, the hydration. Now we get to have a game of we're taking names and numbers and we're winning big races.
Second component of that is experience. This comes from testing and evaluating the knowledge. Testing emulates training. Racing emulates testing. Racing is about executing the strategy. So that's an inverse relationship there between volume and intensity.
Well, think about what you just said. So many people will ruck up to the starting grid, and they'll go and race at an intensity level that their body's never seen before. Mm. Well, now the body can't get rid of the lactic acid quickly enough. It can't get rid of the heat quickly enough. You can't process sugar fast enough. It's a Molotov cocktail. So what we always say is what you learn in testing, field testing, is nothing more. Like, we test our athletes every 6 to 8 weeks religiously. And some of the athletes and some of the parents will give us pushback like, my gosh, we're testing again? Yeah, because if you can't get acclimated to the pressures of testing, what's going to happen when you go to where it really matters, when the gate drops?
Yeah.
So we always say that the way that you train, when you test, all you're doing is regurgitating your strategies of, there's an inverse relationship between volume and intensity. So if you know that you've got to do a 10-mile time trial on the bike, you can light that up intensity-wise versus if you were doing a 40-mile time trial. So that's about getting inside their head about strategy. So if you really pay attention to your training workouts over a six-week block when it comes time for testing, it's about, we always say this on race day, if you think, you're going to lose. And military personnel doesn't hit the ground and go, hey, Ping, which way are you going to go? They've already rehearsed where they're going to go when. Yeah. So when that gate drops, it's autopilot. Well, testing should be the regurgitation of your strategies and habits through training. That's why we say testing emulates training, mm-hmm. and then racing emulates testing. Sometimes your strategy on testing day didn't work. It's not the end of the world. Ask yourself why it didn't work. Oh, I went out too hard and smoked myself. Okay, next time you test, you're going to not fall into that trap to go out too far, too fast. We just, this past weekend, just had the Triathlon World Championships out here in Utah, and it was almost 7,000 feet of climbing on the bike, maybe 6,000, excuse me. I think it's like 5,800 on the bike and another 1,500 on the run. So the joke was you're either going up or you're going down. Well, if you've ever run downhill, it's harder than running uphill. Mm-hmm. So they've swam 2.4 miles, biked 112 with 6,000 feet of climbing, and then had to run a marathon with 1,500 of climbing. Mm. Obviously, the race was on Saturday. Yesterday was all the post-race discussions and all the interviews. And all it was whose strategy worked, who took a risk, who blew up, who barely got across the finish. The second-place guy won in the last half mile.
Oh, is that right?
That's what it came down to. Mm. Almost an eight-hour race came down to a half-mile difference.
Jeez.
You don't think somebody's asking about strategy, tactics? Why did one person slow down? Why was one guy able to speed up? Who burned an extra mash on the bike? Maybe saved it for the run. One guy went out and put it out there. Brad Curry from Australia, or New Zealand, excuse me. He pushed it early on the bike, and he was of five guys that pushed it on the bike. He finished third, but he got passed in the last half mile. My point is who's going to say his strategy was right or wrong? But I guarantee he tested it.
Yeah.
But
no,
then
for
come
sure.
race day, you got to apply it.
And, you know, we see this even in the fire service now. You know, I'm a fireman now, and
we
have a saying, you practice like you play, mm-hmm. because if we're going to go pull hose or throw ladders, you know, we could easily do that in station pants and a light brush jacket and a helmet, right?
Yeah.
But we put all our bunker gear, we put on the pack, we put on the mask, and you do it in all that gear that you would be doing again on a real fire.
There you go.
Because that additional weight, the additional heat, it's a completely different game.
And if I could pull that computer chip out of your head when it's, you guys are rehearsing, you know, what's going through your head? Freak, it's hot. You know, I can't breathe. You know, there's a lot of weight. But when it's the real deal, you don't have time to think that.
No.
And being able to overcome that in training is exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah.
I wish I could pull that computer chip out. We refer to it as, I encourage my athletes to go to create a quiet spot. My oasis is the beach. So when I'm in a high-pressure environment competitively, my heart rate may be at 175, 180, but I can relax my shoulders and I can diaphragmically breathe because I've taught myself to get relaxed in a highly competitive environment. Mm. I would love to see what your strategies are when your heart rate's redlining and ungodly heat from the fire, and you've got the you've got the air pack and you've got the face mask and you're running hose and you're going up or you're saving someone. I mean, the realities of all of that.
Yeah,
for
me,
huge.
I get to a place where I'm just focused on my breathing because I find I can control my heart rate a bit, and the heat continues to build in that gear.
Yeah,
and so it's slowly you're doing this. If you continue to work, anyone will hit a point where they're like, I got to get out. I'm
done. Absolutely.
But if I can control my breathing and I just focus on like big, deep, kind of controlled breaths, I can keep my heart rate down a bit, which in turn keeps my heat from spiking too quickly. But I don't mentally go anywhere because I've got to kind of just stay on what I'm doing, but I just keep talking about my breathing in my head, you know.
Now, think about what you did, what you brought up about 15, 20 minutes ago. Is that a proactive or a reactive approach to the situation?
It's intentional, so for me it's proactive.
It's always proactive, but whether you taught yourself on, you know, through all your experience with racing and as an athlete, somewhere down the line that nugget of knowledge dropped into who you are and now you're applying it in a completely different profession. And that could literally save your life.
Yeah.
And whether you recognize it or not, that's a proactive approach to, you know, it's like you said, you could just let it just escalate till, but you know, if I stay ahead of it and you know, when you're losing it, hey, Johnny, you got to jump in here. Cause I got to tap out for a few. You can sense when you've lost control of it. Take everything we've talked about here in today's show.
Yeah. No, it's interesting. It all applies, you know, and, you know, our last thing here is confidence comes from quantified feedback. Testing is about validating that what you're doing is actually working. And I mean, to use that fire analogy, we go out and we pull hose over and over and over and throw ladders and we run through buildings, vacant buildings, and talk about different strategies for fire attack or whatever our assignment is. And when you get on a fire and an actual fire and you go through all these motions and you're like, wow, that went seamlessly.
Yep.
I mean, you know, that all that practice obviously pays off.
Now add a new dynamic. Let's say you're working with a group of half a dozen guys and you can tell by his disposition, his mannerisms, his reaction time, lack of reaction time, delay. You're like, you need to go, dude. He's like, no, I've got this. And you're like, so now this is a coach client. This is a coach athlete ping pong game. He's saying, I'm fine. And you're like, you're not fine. He thinks he's fine. Is there enough confidence that he realizes you're not calling him out as being soft, but you really, really have his back? And he realizes, he goes back, and all of a sudden he gets out of that heat and that situation, and then he just gets overcome with it. And he's like, freak, had Ping not said that, I could have dropped. Mm-hmm. Now I'm a detriment to all my other supporting guys. I'm a detriment to the situation.
Yeah, you're another victim now.
Now all of a sudden you're like, okay, does he come back and thank you because you saw what was happening? And this is where it goes back to, do I have enough confidence that when I lay out your week, I have enough confidence that you're going to do the supporting work? Because the definition of overtraining is not absorbing the work that you did. Well, you know what to do, but did you do it? Mm-hmm. And then can you have enough confidence that you can say, I don't understand why I'm doing this, and not get ostracized? Now we have a good coach-client relationship. It's no different than a life and death situation like that. The difference is yours could be so immediate. Somebody could lose their life right there. Mine can go on for 15 years.
Sure.
And someone's career is either going to go where they wanted it to go, or it's going to go off the cliff. And when you have a coach that ruins the athlete and goes, sorry, but I've got six more in the hopper, that's irresponsible. There was a show, and I apologize, I don't know if it's on Netflix or whatever. It was called The Making of the Navy SEAL. And I had two little boys at home, and they just thought that stuff was so cool. So we're watching it, and I'll make a long story very short. You know, sun's going down, the water's ice cold, and they get the guys down to their BVDs, and they have to put their hands over their head, and they walk out to the water up to their chest, and they have to sing a song goodbye to the sun. And then they all go up and they sit on the shore, and they're all X amount of feet apart from one another. They're all shivering like crazy, you know, no sun, no clothes. And the I apologize for those of you, I don't know the military terminology, but the big dude that's running around, you know, raising Cain, he picks up a shovel and starts throwing dirt on these guys. And I'm sitting there watching, that's like, I would lose my mind. And he's just getting worse. He's in their face screaming. Yeah, they can go tap out anytime they want. There's the bell. He's throwing dirt on them and all this other stuff. And finally, they ask the question. They go to the camera and go, why do you do this? And he just looks right at the camera and he goes, because I want to know, no matter how bad it gets, this guy's got my back. And at that point in time, I was like, I'm in. I totally get it. Because we all have a tendency to shut down mentally when we really get to our limits. And if it's not your wife, if it's not your partner, if it's not your children, you don't realize what you're capable of until something like that. And I don't mean to pull on a heartstring for you, because I know it's a sensitive subject, but I still go back to the conversation you had when Dan Villopoto went down and you didn't realize it was him. And I forgot who it was that said to you, Ping, that's Dan. And I apologize, what was his name? I can picture his face.
I'm going to brain fart on his name now, but PJ Larson.
Larson. Yeah. And when I was listening to Whiskey Throttle and you said that, man, I just broke into tears, because I thought that right there is a perfect example. It's when you don't, I'm just regurgitating what you said, you know, when you don't put a face with that name, it's autopilot. You're there to do it. You're checking vitals. You're doing this. And then when PJ said, hey, that's Dan, and then it hit you. And then all of a sudden it's like a different person. You can't think straight, and you're just, and but all of this comes together with coach and, you know, the athlete's responsibility, the coach's responsibility. It's understanding what's right and what's wrong, understanding responsibilities on both sides, respecting them, and then implementing them, and then enjoying the process. Because if everything you do is an investment, you know, I challenge my athletes all the time, why do you do what you do? You know, in some sports, there's not a high education level, and people say, that's all I know. It's, you know, I've got to make money, and I get that, but how much is enough money? Mm-hmm. And you know, Ping, out of everybody I've ever asked that's a professional, never had anybody that could give me a reason why they do it. Not one. Usually it's because it's all I know, and then it comes back with it.
Is that right?
Yes, sir. Not one person. And I've been doing this for 37 years. And what's so crazy about it is it usually goes down the same process. It's all I know. then it comes back to, I need the money. And then I quantify it and say, well, how much is enough? And never get a definitive answer. They always have to come back. Because what I always do with my athletes is they say they want to make $40 million. I go, okay, what's your base salary? What's your bonuses? Let's put a divide and conquer, and let's get it done sooner than you think. Because then it's just gravy on top of gravy, and it gives them new motivation. It gives them new insight. Hmm. Because unfortunately, and I challenge the listeners to answer the same question, why do you get up and do what you do tomorrow morning? Yes, you've got two kids at home. You've got Amber. I loved what you said. I think it was with Brad Lackey where you said your marriage is important to you because you came from a broken family and you didn't want that again. And I really respect that. And there's a lot that goes into that. You know, yeah. there's times where it's just easier to pull the parachute because it's just like you're young and all that goes in it. But if you woke up tomorrow independently wealthy, what would you do? Where would you go? What would you eat? Who would you hang out with? And if our listeners will take the time to answer that question, it might remotivate why you get up tomorrow morning. Because if at the end of the day, if you, you know, if you're not hanging out with who you want, eating what you want, doing what you want, and going where you want to go, what are you doing it for?
Yeah. You know, that's so important. Like, I feel like that is it right in line with you know, like, a, what do they call it? Some type of board or just writing down your goals. Mm-hmm. I think it's so simple. It's such a simple thing to just have a sheet of paper somewhere that's up that you can look at regularly and go, what do I want to accomplish?
Mm-hmm.
This and this, you know, short term, long term, it could be very simple stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But like when it's there's a power to writing it down.
Absolutely. Well, and if you just answer those questions, because usually the big stumbling block is, well, I don't have the money to do what I want to do. I don't have the money to eat what I want, live where I want, or hang out with who I want. But if you really step that, if you take the time and you write that question down, if I was independently wealthy and I woke up tomorrow, what would I eat? Where would I go? What would I wear? Who would I hang out with? And then you ran that against how you spent today. Yeah, it gives you some real good insight as to where to start.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny because I have a hard time getting my girls to do this. They kind of laugh at me. And I'm like, look, just school,
mm-hmm.
personal life, and soccer. Just give me those three things. What are your goals? And then just give me a couple of things, how we're going to get there. And I mean, it's a struggle to get them to sit down and do that with me.
Well, let's elaborate on that. And I know we're running long here, but I'll be quick. One of the challenges that we run into, especially with your daughters, is, and this isn't against, because I've got two young boys and a young daughter as well, they have not been taught how to think and to articulate. Because if it gets uncomfortable, they go to something else.
Mm-hmm.
You look at TikTok and these 5 second, they're just waiting for the next input. It's just constant new input. And I always say to my young riders, like, for example, I did this with AC when he was growing up, is I want you to interview yourself in the mirror, as uncomfortable as that is, because eventually you're going to be on the other side of a camera and you're getting paid to do it. Would you rather be an interview like a Travis Pastrana, who's very vivacious and bubbly and can laugh at himself and engages the camera? Or do you want to be that one that answers in one word sentences and the producer's in the ear going, let's go to somebody else, this is not going anywhere? Our children nowadays are not thought, and they're not taught to think. So, for example, for those that ride moto, I say to the kids all the time, they'll come in, they say, the bike's not handling well. Okay, cool. I appreciate that input, but what do you want it to do? And they go, well, I don't know. And I go, well, let's start with what you don't like. Front end's pushing, the front end's, you know, it's coming back too quick, or whatever the it may be. Okay, cool. You've now elaborated on what you want. Do you understand how to get it? No, I don't. Then go hire a suspension specialist and bring that person in, and then let's connect the dots. What is the bike doing that you don't like? Okay, how would I fix it given those conditions? Now the parent gets educated. Now when the rider comes in, they're giving feedback. The parents know what adjustments are made. What is it we're trying to do? And you've been this as a pro racer. If you can't get that bike to feel good, doesn't matter how fit you are, You're wrestling the bike.
Yeah.
So now, when your daughters kind of look at that and go, wait a second, you want me to articulate what do I want to accomplish? They're going to go, this is awkward. You know why? Because you haven't done it. It's a familiarity principle. So you keeping your foot on the gas pedal going, look, it's not easy. Stop and think. Articulate your thoughts. Well, that's hard. I don't know how to explain it. Exactly. That's why we're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
The more you do it, now when you say, okay, what do we want to accomplish? Well, I want to win national championship. I want a college scholarship. Okay, cool. What's standing between where you're at and where we need to be? Now it's quantified. Now we can divide and conquer.
Mm-hmm.
But it took them saying, I want a college degree. I want to be on the traveling team. Whatever the it is. If you can't articulate it, you're never going to get there.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And it's hard. It's hard for us as adults as well, because we have a million and one other things that we can be busy with. And we're like, I'm not going to sit and write that down. Well, then you're going to wake up tomorrow with the same people you don't like, doing the same thing you don't enjoy.
That's a 20-minute thing.
It is.
Go in your backyard, close your eyes, take a few breaths, collect your thoughts, and write down your goals and how you're going to get there. Well, I mean, it does not take a lot of time.
You know, Melissa, we see this all the time. People can blame it all you want. Michaela can attest to this. I mean, I never, ever leave the house without a spiral notebook, ever. Even if we go to a high-end dinner restaurant, she's patient enough with me. I always have it. Always have it. Because when you get it written down, you can do something with that. Mm-hmm. And you know how it is. You don't want to give up a thought or something. So just throwing it down doesn't interrupt your dinner with Amber. It's just, you know, hey, when you get back, whether it's firehouse or whatever you're doing. Oh. But then you can stay refocused on where you're at. And then when you've got time in your schedule where you're going to go and do those follow-up things, it's one of my biggest pet peeves with our staff is I have no problem doing a brainstorming, like what we're going to do, but then we have to make the time for you to follow up with that. Otherwise, it just sits in a spiral notebook and doesn't go anywhere. Well, it's the same thing with health, wellness, and performance. If it's written down, we can't manage time. We can only manage ourselves. So if you're not eating good, healthy food, why is that? You probably haven't had time to go to the store. If you did you have enough time to clean it and pack it and prep it? And then if you did that, did you remember to bring it? Because most of the time you're in your truck, you hit fast food because you look in the passenger seat and there's no cooler full of fresh fruit and some lean meat or lean protein, you hit the drive-through.
Yeah.
Well, that's not the problem, is the drive-through, is you didn't have time to go to the store to pack it, clean it, and get it in the car. And we could break this down over and over again, but I want it to be words of encouragement to the listeners is when we talk about coach responsibilities and accountability, and you look at the athlete accountability and responsibilities, and you put those together, to me, it's one of the best relationships ever. But it does take thick skin, and it does – I hate the complacency.
Yeah.
Nothing pisses me off more.
I know. So to sort of – break down this athlete responsibility, some questions for them to ask here. Am I ready to train today? Do I need to adjust my volume, intensity, and or rest interval? Is my decision in line with the 3, 6, 12-month or multi-year goals? Am I absorbing my workloads leading to incremental improvements? Am I eating and sleeping enough for a state of anabolic growth versus catabolic teardown? Through cross-evaluation, a confident decision can be made, trusted, and incremental improvements are nearly guaranteed. So a super good kind of wrap up, I think, there. Just talking about the responsibilities of both parties, and everybody just needs to kind of, well, I'll speak from the athlete side. You got to just check your ego at the door and be really honest.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and it's always interesting to me because if we go
I suppose both sides, because if a coach is his ego, he might be like,
don't question me.
Yeah, right.
You know, I'm always right. And look at all my championships. Yeah. Don't doubt me.
Yeah.
I have 257 amateur national titles and 4 AMA number one plates just in moto. That doesn't mean squat to a parent who has a new young athlete. It's like, well, how do you convey that to my child? Isn't that really what matters?
Yeah.
You know, and if you stop and you really boil all that down at the end of the day, all we're trying to do is get incremental improvement in a healthy, sustainable way.
Yeah.
And if you're not going to quantify it, it's just going to be a spray and pray format. And I hate to say it, but history speaks for itself. It never ends well. Mm-hmm. Never ends well.
CompleteRacingSolutions.com?
CoachRob.com would be the starting pot.
Okay.
Please, if you would start there, and then wherever your sport of choice is, we have a vertical for it. So happy to help in any way.
Go check that website out, folks. If you're not familiar with it, a lot of you probably are if you're watching this, but so many resources there, from nutrition to training to sleep to you name it. You can dive in as deep as you want to dive in. Contact Rob directly. It's an incredible resource for not just elite level athletes, but just folks that want to feel better, look better, and live healthier. So check it out.
Thank you so much, bud.
Yep. Thanks for tuning in. We got more coming, so stay tuned.